Glenn Beck.
While you were sleeping in the early morning hours of Saturday, the Senate passed the final version of its tax bill. Senate voted 51-49 with Senator Bob Corker as the lone Republican voting against it. The big takeaway from the bill is the plan will reduce the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20%. That is huge. That is, if that actually goes through and happens, if Trump signs this into law, you're going to see, you'll see a boom to the economy. Now, Trump apparently is already walking away from the 20% after the bill passed. He told reporters, you know, it could be 22 when it all comes out, but it could also be 20. We'll see. The difference between the two percentage points, $200 billion. The passage of the Senate tax bill is a step in the right direction for the most part, but the House and the Senate still have to hash out the differences in their plans, and I have no idea what the final version is going to be right now. But cutting the corporate tax rate is good. I wish he was giving money to, you know, everyday people as well. It's the hasty way Congress is dealing with bills now. It kind of stinks of the Obama era politics, passing bills in the cover of darkness and at 2 a.m. on a Saturday. And only after the details of the plan are kind of released in a shady sort of way, you're kind of like, I don't even know what they're voting on. The Republicans are desperately trying to comply with Trump's demand to sign anything of substance by the end of the year. Not a good reason to pass a bill, but I'm hoping the bill will be good for the country. But one thing is for sure, unless we do something about it, Congress will continue to act as if we're all asleep.
It's Monday, December 4th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I read a story in The Guardian. Do you trust The Guardian? You think The Guardian is any good?
I don't trust anybody.
Do you trust anybody?
Not really. Very few people. No. I mean, it's... Look, I mean, you have a board behind you. As I sit here in the studio, I look behind you to a giant chalkboard.
Yeah.
And on that chalkboard is a giant timeline of the past 2 months. Which contains approximately 40, 45 people who have been accused of sexual harassment, assault, rape, you know, name the sexual crime. And some of them on there, some of them you'd predict, right? Harvey Weinstein, you kind of, kind of the guy who started this all off.
George H.W. Bush never would have seen that coming. I would have put him in the safe category.
Absolutely.
My dying breath, I would have.
Yeah, George H.W. Bush, I mean, I would not have seen
that coming. No, would not have seen that one coming.
You've got NPR hosts, politicians, you've got, I mean,
everybody.
Star Trek actors and, you know.
Charlie Rose.
Yeah.
Charlie Rose and Garrison Keillor would have put them in the safe category.
Keillor's so weird looking, though. I feel like there's something.
So you're saying that there's only way.
I think there is.
The only way he can.
I know. It's not even that. It's just there's a look, right? There is a look.
No, there's a look of the guy who is the photograph, the photographer. It's under October 23rd. The photographer released on the same day that George Bush's, you know, harassment comes out. This is a photographer who is taking pictures of models. You look at him and you're like, okay, yeah.
right.
Grab the kids and start running, okay? I mean, he just looks like, if he moves in next door, you are having a conversation with your kids. Don't go to the child molester's house. Okay? Just, he's got that look.
Well, there's these industries, these sort of side industries to the like mainstream entertainment that are now all getting hit with this. I mean, the photographer thing is there's going to be a huge reckoning there, right? Because, I mean, it's a bunch of guys taking pictures of, like, 19-year-olds who are half-naked or all naked. Like, that business, there's got to be all sorts of stones turned over there.
What's happening, the real gold mine here, I think, is Congress. I think we should have a trading floor. Mm-hmm. I think we should have a futures. Who do you think is next? When are they going to get it? Because especially in Washington...
I like this because the guilt by accusation hasn't gone far enough. We're just going to start putting people who haven't even been accused on the board.
Yeah, we're just going to start trading that. Yeah, they've got something to hide.
That's good. That's helpful to the nation, I think. I think that's a good idea.
Well, I mean, if we're wrong, then we lose because we would put our money behind, you know, to get on the trading floor, you have to buy in. So you're like, you know, I'm going to put my $10 on this guy.
Well, it was interesting because it was a DARPA that did something a long time ago. They tried to come up with a market that would basically predict terrible events, right?
It
like terrorist attacks.
Yeah.
And the thought was people would get involved in this and like people who knew that a terrorist attack was coming would start to bid up certain prices. They would to make money off of it.
Yeah, and it might wasn't, wait. It wasn't, right? It wasn't that they knew a terrorist attack was coming. It was made for the investigative bodies and the think tanks around the world that were trying to figure out terrorism. And so like the CIA and MI6, they could all be a part of this trading floor. And they would say, you know what? We want to put so much points. There was no money exchange. We want to put so many points on an airplane, Middle East, these guys. And the theory was, as you would see the other agencies around the world, they would start to have, you know, oh, I got a bid in peace. That kind of makes sense with that one. So I'm going to say yes to that one. And it would shake out and it would be a pool of collective knowledge without actually sharing any of the collective knowledge. It would just be, we're watching something over here that kind of goes with that. I think, I mean, DARPA was right.
And they were hit. Like, oh, how dare you? You're betting on terrorism. This is a terrible.
Yeah, like it was a great idea.
It's something certainly worth exploring because markets are efficient and they usually can help solve problems.
And that's why I think we need to start our trading floor for sexual harassers.
Because then if you, let's say you had an accusation you knew was coming out, right? Like you could.
Or if everybody knew, okay, this guy in Congress. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine you go to the people in Congress and say, hey, you can make some money here. You just have to bet on which one of your colleagues is next. These weasels would be, they'd be like, oh my gosh, this guy's so dirty.
Especially like the actors who haven't had a hit show in a while. Like, I got nothing going on, but I do know that guy, I know Kevin Spacey's been doing all sorts of shady stuff. I'm going to put some money on him.
Yeah.
I think we could predict this
so
pretty
I
well.
So I don't think that we actually go to the people who know. I just think we do it ourselves, just by the way they look. I mean, let's make this a little more...
Creepy. Okay.
Yeah. Let's make this a little more like a witch hunt. Okay. You know, it's not bad enough that you don't have to have any evidence. You just have to say it. But we're going to base it just on what we think by the way you look.
That's efficient. I like that.
Right.
Because I mean, they're.
But I can't think of anybody that I would put in the no way category. Who would you put in the no way category? After George H.W. Bush, who would you put in the no way category? Mike Lee. I would put Mike Lee in the no way category.
I'd be comfortable with that.
Beyond him.
It's very few. I mean, we know the Cruz family with his multiple affairs and assassination of JFK.
Just the assassination deep in that family.
Who knows what's going on there?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's really, you're right. I don't think you could, at this point, you just...
Nobody.
Yeah, and especially because we don't even know if these people did this, right? There's 40-some-odd names behind you on the chalkboard, but in reality, there's very few of them we know actually did the thing they were accused of. There's a few of them that have kind of admitted it or, talked about it publicly, and some crimes are worse than others on that board. But still, like... But
if you look, those 40 names came out over the last 2 months. It's like every two or three days.
Oh, it's and over the weekend, like this is what I was kind of getting to before. There was a music conductor, a playwright or something like that. Like it's all these like now sort of side industries that people.
Yeah,
that
now
I don't
it's
know.
Like ah, like it's I a was music conductor. I was paying attention to. What kind of power does he have?
I was at the South Bend Arby's and I was working as a fry cook and right. I was like, now we're getting to that point, right. But still, and you know, it does seem like this is a never ending thing. And I think it's probably the correct observation that this is what they're going to go after Trump on once this settles down a little bit. They're going to try to bring back those accusations. They're going to try to.
Absolutely. It's going to start tomorrow.
I think the higher the stakes, the less it feels real. Like, I think a lot of people, even if like the more thing was if,
not
if
higher was, the stakes, the more political
it feels less real. Like,
yes,
with Donald Trump, like, there's a lot of things I've critical about Trump on, but like, you look at the accusations of the harassment. There is a part of me that saw that and was just like, he's running for president of the United States. Of course he's being accused of a million different things. It's hard. Once you get to that point, you get some level of immunity almost, I think, from people who just say, there's so much at stake here. There's so much to motivate someone to say something like this that you kind of say, well, I don't know. I can't judge their heart. I can't judge this unless I have actual evidence. Now, of course, that's how you're supposed to judge all of these.
I know.
I thought it might be important time to point that out. You're supposed to have evidence on all of them.
So I don't know if you saw this from The Guardian. It's why I started with, who do you trust? The Guardian says, why did Roy Moore escape to Australia? Clues remain in the outback wilderness.
Okay. He escaped to the outback wilderness?
Yes, yes. Okay, so...
I don't know this story.
Right.
Roy Moore, the Senate candidate from Alabama, escaped to the Australian wilderness.
Yes. So in 1984, Moore spent the better part of a year in Queensland outback, where he lived and worked with the Rolfe family, the hardworking, deeply religious former owners of Telamon. But how he ended up there and what drove him, an ambitious 37-year-old assistant district attorney, to this remote outpost has mostly remained a mystery. Mm. The Guardian spent a week in central Queensland seeking out those who knew Moore to find out what was he doing there so far from home. What emerged was a portrait of a man overcoming his own personal demons, but one who never left the impression on those he met as anything but a gentleman. So it goes into all this mystery. What was he doing there? And then you start to, they start interviewing people. Well, I don't know. It was pretty normal for us.
yeah, but he's doing it in Australia.
Huh? Mm. Yeah. I don't think he'd ever done any sort of manual labor in his life, but he took to the hard labor like a duck to water. He was a hardworking man. One woman, who is 16 years old when Moore lived with the Rolfes, came close contact with him, said, I never felt uncomfortable around him. Maybe he was trying to get away from something. There was nothing of that kind on my part. I didn't feel uneasy with him at all. There was never anything even remotely like that. And I was in my teenage years. That would have been prime time if he was going to do something. Usually you'll have your antenna out for something like that. But I remember him being gregarious, bubbly, loud, you know, a typical American. I do remember that he sucked at tennis. Another said, I never thought of him anything other than a good bloke. Another woman said, certainly there weren't any alarm bells or anything. He just seemed like a very pleasant man. That's all I can recall. Another one said,
wow.
Another one said, he was a man. I remember him as a man with deep religious belief and a gentle man with a beautiful singing voice. It's interesting. Roy is a person who's a little bit set in his beliefs, and he doesn't like change. So when he has an idea about something, it's black and white. He doesn't see it in gray. I couldn't say whether the allegations may be correct or not, but I find him very surprising because of his treatment of us and the family and all the women who were with us. He was very morally correct. I mean, it's possible people have a second side outside of moral company, but we never saw it.
So basically, The Guardian went to Australia to find dirt, and what they found is a bunch of people who said, actually, he was very nice, but he was not good at tennis.
Right, right.
So,
what was he doing? Why was he so afraid of tennis? I did find it interesting that The Guardian actually published it, though. Instead of saying there's not a story there, they just wrote a fancy headline to get you to think that there was something there. And then when you read it, I mean, from the beginning, like there was nothing.
You read quotes from like paragraph 8. There's been 4 people in the history of the internet that have made it to paragraph 8.
Yes.
They all needed the headline.
But it wasn't on page 16. It was also on page 16 mm-hmm. and page 1. Mm.
Glenn Beck.
Very excited to talk to an author. His name is A.G. Riddle. He's the author of Pandemic, and I'm trying to remember the name of his new one. I think it's Departure. I found him about 10 days ago, and I've read all five of his novels in the last 10 days or 12 days. I'm interested in the topic that he talks about. He's kind of a sci-fi action writer. He's a guy from Silicon Valley who did some startups and now is writing about, you know, quantum computing, and he's fascinated with the evolution of man. And I just find his work really compelling. And I don't know if anybody, did you even know? We should check out. Is he like famous or anything? Or is this a, I mean, I know nothing about him. He's going to be on with us because I think you should meet him. And if you're looking for a good book to read, any of his books are great, especially if you're into futuristic, the paradox that we are beginning to go into. His latest is Departure, and it's about time travel and quantum computing and what is in store for us in the future. And it's really good. It's really good.
It's an entertaining way to talk about the nerd culture you're obsessed with.
Yes,
basically.
I started because I was looking for. I'm reading all kinds of. Science and tech books right now, and I'm looking for who's telling this in an interesting way. I find, you know, we kind of did this with people like Brad Thor, and, you know, became friends with
Vince Flynn,
yep. Because at the time they were looking at entertaining ways to tell people what we're really fighting,
you know, terrorism and all of that, international intrigue.
Right. So I'm looking now for some entertaining ways to talk to people about what we should be thinking about, the things that should be crossing our mind. And, you know, you hear about Stephen Hawking said, he just reiterated it again this weekend, that he believes the human race will be finished, that Homo sapiens will be done by 2050, that we'll be out. And I think
time we're put out of our misery, to be quite honest.
I know. I actually think that he may be right, but not in the way that everybody thinks, not the way that you just heard that sentence. There's something very logical to what he said, especially if you know history or if you're reading stuff like A.G. Riddle. I think he made that clear, and we'll talk about that top of next hour.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So glad that you're here today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you had a good weekend. We have some good news about the Nazarene Fund. Tomorrow, we have Tim Ballard in. He is the CEO of Operation Underground Railroad, which is an amazing group of people that are going in and breaking up the slave trade for sex trafficking all around the world, and doing some amazing things here in the United States, but they can't talk about them here in the United States. We have partnered with them, with the Nazarene Fund. So now Tim is the official CEO of the Nazarene Fund. And the reason why we partnered with him is because I wanted to expand it. You know, we didn't know what we were doing August 2 years ago when I said, hey, let's raise $1 million and let's see if we can get, you know, 10 families out or 100 families out of the Middle East. Well, we did get 100 families out. In fact, we had almost 8,000 families, Christians, that had been marked for death by ISIS. We got about 8,000 of them out. We moved another, 6 or 10,000 to different parts of the Middle East So they were safe from ISIS. I mean, it is truly one of the most remarkable stories, I think, in radio history or television history when it comes to a single audience. This single audience saved 8,000 marked for death Christians. We didn't know what we were doing at first, but we got to be pretty good at it. But then the mission kind of went into another direction as we were hearing from the families that we were moving. They said, you know, my sister and her daughters have been kidnapped and they're in the slave trade and they're being held by ISIS. So we started looking into that and we hired some people, former military, et cetera, to go in and rescue these people. We have raised to date now, we have freed 100 slaves in Iraq alone. And these are all women and children. The youngest one, the last one, was 3 years old. That is horrible. We've lost two operatives in a mission. We got the slaves out. They went back for more, and they both lost their lives. We need to bring in some, you know, some people who really know what they're doing. And that was Tim Ballard. And so Tim and Operation OUR and the Nazarene Fund have merged together. And we are going to take on the slave trade, but not only the slave trade in the Middle East and Northern Africa. But I can't get into a lot of details, there's organ trafficking going on now. And what they're doing is they're kidnapping these children that are Christians. Because remember, ISIS and people like them believe that, you know, you don't have a right to live. You're not really a person if you're a Christian. And so they take these kids and these families and they're harvesting them for organs. And it's horrific what is happening. And I have seen a video of one of them, and we haven't decided whether or not we're going to show it. It's disturbing. It's just disturbing. And we put operatives down on the ground. We know where this happened. It's not happening there now, but we have devised some ways to break up the organ harvesting as well and really get to the source of a lot of this. But we need your help. It's going to take a lot of people, and we have so many people from special forces from all around the world that want to do this. It just takes money to do it. So our goal for the year is to raise $25 million. That will free a lot of slaves, and it will change not only the Middle East, but it'll make a huge dent around the world. So we really could use your help and your support. I got an amazing handwritten letter in from an 8-year-old boy. I'll have to show it to you on TV tonight. This 8-year-old boy named Garand, he just wrote, "Please use this $8 to help the Christians in the Middle East." It warms our heart so much to see the kids participating in this. And we're working on some things to help teach your kids about what's really happening and the evil that is around the world, but to show them, you know, real life superheroes. You know, you don't have to go to comic books. There are real life superheroes that are saving people. And we would love to get your kids involved in this because they're going to be dealing with it in their lifetime as well. Good news is, just in the first few days of our fundraising, we've raised $250,000. So we're 1% there, but this is the first, it was like the first 4 days of this. And our goal is to raise $25 million in the next year. So by Christmas of next year, to be able to raise $25 million, we really need your help. You can go to thenazarenefund.org, thenazarenefund.org. Thank you. So I don't know if you remember. Do you remember Congressman Massey?
Not Massey. Massa?
Was it?
Eric Massa?
Massa. Eric Massa. Yeah, that was his name.
Thomas Massey is a good
congressman. Yeah, good guy. You're right. You're
so
right.
This is another.
This is Eric Massa.
All right.
Okay, so Eric Massa was a guy. This is for if you're a longtime listener or viewer of the show. I was on Fox. The guy called in. He was a Democrat. And he said, I've got some dirt on the Democrats. I'm going to expose it all. And I want to talk to you. Okay. He called in during the show. Do you remember? And he said he had all kinds of information that he was going to expose. Well, give me some. Not until I'm on the show. Well, we knew that there was some scandal going on. We didn't know exactly what. We found out that it was all revolving around tickle fights. Do you remember the tickle fight guy? Yes. Here is play a cut one, please.
Somebody says I groped male staffers, female staffers. You know, I was fondling a cat, whatever it is. I don't resign. I stand up and I say.
No, you do.
No,
and here's why.
No, so, I don't.
Well, I do, and here's why. Because it doesn't make any difference what my intentions were. It's how it's perceived by the individual who receives that action.
That's the Franken-line.
And we set it up so that it could be completely...
Your name is at stake here.
And that...
No. Not just your name.
Everybody's name.
Your children's
That's
name.
Right.
Okay? So there are some. There's something called honor. You are a Navy guy.
So the only other
honor.
Thing... Glenn, the only thing I do is slip my wrist and bleed out here on the... I'm telling you, I was wrong. I was wrong. It's why I've...
Wait. What you're saying to me is they took it wrong.
No, I'm saying my behavior was wrong. My behavior was wrong. I should have never allowed myself to be as familiar with my staff as I was. I never translated from my days in the Navy to being a congressman.
All right.
It was, but I did not. Let me be very clear.
I don't know if tickle fights in the Navy. I've never been in the Navy.
Oh,
I don't know if tickle fights in the
Navy.
Let
me show you some.
You're going to show me tickle fights?
I'm going to show you a lot more than tickle fights.
Whoa. Yeah. Okay. So he just went on with this. This tickle fight was normal. I finally had enough. Cut two, please.
What I cannot put in together in my head, you believe these things. You're trying to convince me you believe these things.
Yep, and I can't change
it. Do you realize?
As a member of Congress.
Bull crap.
I can't, especially.
Bull crap,
no,
sir.
No, it's not.
Listen
bull crap.
To me.
Here's why.
Do you realize what some of us, are doing? We're not in elected office. Do you realize my family is at stake? Do you realize? Excuse me, sir.
So is mine.
Excuse me for a second, sir. My family is at stake. You've got a little scandal with your children in college. I've got one for all time now because I'm not going to resign. I'm not going to back down. I have come to a place to where I believe at some point the system will destroy me. That's okay because I'm going to do what I can to pass on a better America for tomorrow. So I don't understand the white flag. It doesn't make sense to me.
For 30 years, I've been doing it. I can't fight this. I can't fight cancer. I can't fight the White House. I can't fight the Democratic Party. I can't fight the Republicans. I can't fight anymore.
Okay. So he was trying to make himself look like a hero. But here's what happened. This came out now on Friday. Here's the real story. So Massa. My apologies to Massey. Massa, he calls us and says, I'm going to expose Harry Reid. I'm going to expose the party. And we know he is in trouble for tickle fights. So we say, well, what do you have? But I'm going to expose it. Then we know that about 4 o'clock, about an hour before the show on Fox, the social media changes. And all of a sudden, people in the Democratic Party are starting to rally around him. He comes on the show and he says, okay, so I'm not going to tell you what I told you. This is what I really want to say. I was wrong. Didn't make any sense. Did you make a deal with Harry Reid? Did you make a deal of some sort? No. What came out Friday was when they're looking through the records on who paid out. Did the parties pay for any sexual harassment lawsuits? Yeah. On that day, the day of the broadcast, it looks like the Democrats decided to pay to cover his butt. So my guess is the deal came down. He used me as a wedge to get a deal, which is what we suspected. But now we know a deal was made. And people who were crying sexual harassment about him were paid off by the Democratic Party. That is what happened. And now you know the rest of the story. Have to make a book list for you. I've read some really good books lately. Great history book. A couple of them. Some really good. You haven't read Brett King's Augmented Life in the Smart Lane? You should. Really good. Reading some great novels. And I'll put a list together in case you want. In case you have book lovers, you know, on your Christmas list, I'll get you a book list. I asked Rafe last night if he would do one too. Rafe is my son, 13. He reads probably more than I do. And is just, he devours. I mean, literally if he starts in the morning and, you know, has kind of a normal day, he can finish a novel in a day. By nighttime he's finished. So he just reads. And I asked him if he would put together a list for, you know, 13-year-old boys, if you have a 13-year-old boy, because he reads pretty much everything. We're going to do that. We talked last night about reading The Immortal Nicholas, because we read every night before we go to bed. So we talked about reading The Immortal Nicholas as a family. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to make that just for subscribers only. On theblaze.com. It won't be on the TV network or anything else. It'll just be subscribers only. I got to figure out the technology to, you know, get it so it's really easy to just upload every night. But we'll read, probably starting this week, The Immortal Nicholas until Christmas.
And you're also helping teach him a lesson that eventually every good book just winds up being in video at some point, whether it's a movie or something else, so you don't really have to read it. Because reading's, you know, a long time.
And no, I really...
Someone eventually will read it to you on the internet.
Yeah,
that's
no.
All you, that's the lesson to learn, kids.
No,
At some point, or they'll make a movie out of
no,
it.
No,
one of the two.
No, I don't. Actually, I read... Let me see if I can find it here on my list. I read... Oh, it's... Love of Money, or I can't remember what it's called here. Let me see if I can find it. But it is the story of... the movie that is coming out, All the Money in the World. Some Disgustingly Rich or something like that.
They're running ads for that. That's the movie that Kevin Spacey was in, and they edited him out of it.
Yes.
And now Christopher Plummer is playing that role. First of all, the movie looks amazing.
I read the book that it's based on.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Getty, right?
About Getty. Mm-hmm. And so it tells the whole... The movie is just really kind of one chapter of this book. But I read the book. I can't wait for the movie.
You know what I want to happen? Is about 2 days before it comes out, I don't care if it's true or not, come out and accuse Christopher Plummer of sexual harassment just to see if they try to edit somebody else in. I just see last minute, they're like, all right.
He's got a guy reading. Just got the guy reading line. I won't pay anything for my grandson. It's Painfully Rich is the name of the book by John Pearson. Painfully Rich. If you're into the Getty story, that's a wild ride. Wild ride.